Luke chapter 23. And the whole multitude of them arose and led him to Pilate, and then began to accuse him, saying, "We found this fellow perverting the nation, and forbidding to give taxes to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ, a king." So a bunch of false accusations. Of course, you know, he is the Christ and the king. But he certainly didn't tell them not to pay their taxes. The very opposite. He told them to pay taxes. And Pilate asked him, saying, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he answered him and said, "You say it." Then said Pilate to the chief priests and to the people, "I find no fault in this man." You know, he wasn't, even if he went around saying, "I am the Christ," I don't know that that was against the law. Well, I guess they would consider it blasphemy. And they were even more fierce, saying, "He stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea, beginning from Galilee to this place." I find that really ironic that they said he stirs up the people, because they are, in fact, the ones stirring up the people. I mean, 5 minutes ago, he was still popular with the people. But you get a crowd together, you plant some troublemakers who get the crowd stirred up, and before you know it, these people who normally would not do the things that they're doing are doing awful things. It's happened for centuries and centuries. It happens here in the U.S. today with the riots. People just get stirred up and they will start acting like horrible people, when maybe normally, if they weren't in a crowd being egged on by somebody, they wouldn't act that way. So I just find it funny that they're accusing him of something that they're the ones guilty of. They're the ones stirring up the people. When Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. And as soon as he knew that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod. So, get rid of this guy. I don't want to deal with him. Who himself was also in Jerusalem at that time. And when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceedingly glad, for he had desired to see him for a long season, because he had heard many things about him, and he hoped to have seen some miracle done by him. Now, don't be mistaken. Herod wasn't excited to see the Christ and to hear the truth and to hear about the coming of this his spiritual kingdom, the church. No. He was a spectacle. He wanted to be entertained. He wanted to see what all the hubbub and fuss was. He was not searching for the truth. Then he questioned him with many words, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and scribes stood and vehemently accused him. And Herod, with his men of war, despised him and mocked him and arrayed him in a gorgeous robe and sent him again to Pilate. There you go. So there's Herod's true intentions. He was not at all interested in learning the truth. He just wanted to see some entertainment. He didn't get anything from Jesus. Jesus answered him nothing. And so he got bored with Jesus real quick, sent him back to Pilate. And the same day, Pilate and Herod became friends with each other, for before they were at enmity with each other. So now they had something in common. Nice. And Pilate, when he had called together the chief priests and the rulers and the people, said to them, "You have brought this man to me as one who perverts the people. And behold, having examined him before you, I have found no fault in this man concerning those things of which you accuse him. No, nor has Herod, for I sent you to him. And behold, nothing worthy of death has been done by him. I will therefore chastise him and release him, for of necessity he must release one to them at the feast." I guess this was the tradition, that he would release one prisoner to them at the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And they all cried out at once, saying, "Away with this man, and release to us Barabbas, who was cast into prison for a certain rebellion made in the city and for murder." Now remember, just the previous day probably, people were still following him around and listening to him, and they were amazed at him. Now look at him. They want to kill, and release Barabbas, our murderer. Yeah, we want to see Barabbas, the murderer, released, and kill Jesus. It's that crowd mentality. Pilate, therefore willing to release Jesus, spoke again to them, but they cry, saying, "Crucify him, crucify him." That's because those nasty Pharisees and chief priests and scribes were in the crowd stirring up the people. And he said to them the third time, "Why? What evil has he done? I have found no cause for death in him. I will therefore chastise him and let him go." So Pilate tried three times to let Jesus go, but the people said no. And unfortunately, Pilate caved. He gave in to the pressure. Instead of standing up for what was right, he gave in to the pressure. And they were insistent with loud voices, demanding that he might be crucified. And the voices of them and of the chief priests prevailed. And Pilate gave sentence that it should be as they demanded. And he released to them whom they had desired, who was cast into prison for rebellion and murder. But he delivered Jesus to their will. And as they led him away, they laid hold on one Simon a Cyrenian coming out of the country, and they laid the cross on him that he might bear it after Jesus. I always envisioned Simon as being voluntarily doing this. I'm not so sure. You know, the way this is worded, it's kind of like they grabbed him and made him do this. I don't know. I can't remember what the other accounts say. And a great company of people followed him, and women who also mourned and lamented him. But Jesus, turning to them, said, "Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children." He's talking about AD 70, which is coming. "For behold, the days are coming in which they shall say, 'Blessed are the barren, and the wombs that never bore, and the breasts that never nursed.' Then they shall begin to say to the mountains, 'Fall on us,' and to the hills, 'Cover us.' For if they do these things in a green tree, what shall be done in the dry?" Again, he's warning them about AD 70. He said, "Don't cry for me, cry for yourselves, because things are going to get bad. When the Roman armies come to destroy Jerusalem, it's going to get really, really bad." And there were also two others, criminals, led with him to be put to death. And when they had come to the place that is called Calvary, which means place of the skull, there they crucified him and the criminals, one on the right hand and the other on the left. Then Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." And they divided his clothing and cast lots. And that was prophesied in the Old Testament. And the people stood watching, and also the rulers with him derided him, saying, "He saved others. Let him save himself, if he is the Christ, the chosen of God," which he absolutely could have. There's another account that says that he could have called 12 legions of angels. That's like 120,000 angels he could have called to come and get him. But he is allowing this to happen to him because it is the will of God. And the soldiers also mocked him, coming to him and offering him vinegar and saying, "If you are the king of the Jews, save yourself." And an inscription was also written over him in letters of Greek and Latin and Hebrew, "This is king of the Jews," which of course is, they're mocking him. This is not out of respect. And one of the criminals who was hanged railed on him, saying, "If you are Christ, save yourself and us." But the other, answering, rebuked him, saying, "Do you not fear God, seeing you are in the same condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we receive the due reward of our deeds, but this man has done nothing wrong." We're supposed to be here. We're guilty. We're thieves. This guy, Jesus, is innocent. He didn't do anything wrong. And he said to Jesus, "Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And Jesus said to him, "Truly I say to you, today you shall be with me in paradise." And it was about the sixth hour, and there was a darkness over all the earth until the ninth hour. So from about noon to 3 p.m., when normally there would be bright sunshine, it was completely dark. The sun was darkened, and the veil of the temple was torn in the middle. I can't even imagine. That must have been so eerie. And when Jesus had cried with a loud voice, he said, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." And having said this, he gave up his spirit. Now, to go back to this, the thief on the cross, there are a lot of people that say, well, baptism is not necessary because look at the thief on the cross. He wasn't baptized, and Jesus said, "Today you will be with me in paradise." Well, a couple things about that. First of all, This man lived under the law of Moses. Baptism was not required under the law of Moses. Second of all, if you have the Son of God standing, well, he wasn't standing, hanging right there next to you, telling you your sins are forgiven, you're okay. So there are so many other passages that teach that baptism is for the remission of sins and is necessary for salvation. I think this is a very weak argument to say, well, we don't need to be baptized because the thief wasn't. Well, first of all, he lived under a different law. Second of all, he had the Son of God telling him his sins were forgiven him. And when Jesus had cried, okay, see, I already read that. Now when the centurion saw what was done, he glorified God, saying, certainly this was a righteous man. I think in another account, it says he said, truly this was the Son of God. And all the people who came together to that sight, watching the things that were done, struck their breasts and returned. And all his acquaintances and the women who followed him from Galilee stood afar off, watching these things. And behold, there was a man named Joseph, a member of the council. He was a good and a righteous man. The same had not consented to the council in their deed. He was from Arimathea, city of the Jews, who himself also waited for the kingdom of God. This man went to Pilate and begged for the body of Jesus. And he took it down and wrapped it in linen and laid it in a sepulcher that was cut in stone in which no man had been laid. I think another account says the tomb was actually for him, for himself, but he gave it to Jesus. And that day was the preparation and the Sabbath drew near. So this must have been Friday, because the Sabbath or Saturday was drawing near. And also the women who came with him from Galilee followed after and saw the sepulcher and how his body was laid. And they returned and prepared spices and ointments, and they rested on the Sabbath day according to the commandment, which would be Saturday. So they wanted to prepare, you know, basically anoint his body and everything, but they needed to obey the law of Moses as far as the Sabbath was concerned. Why? Because they were still under the law of Moses at this point. And we will finish Luke in one more chapter. So that's Luke 23.